Being the February 22nd, 2011 session of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and welcome everyone here this afternoon. Thank you all for your attendance. Just a couple of announcements. In the event that any of you are here for work sessions, we will not be working a couple of bills because our committee's work has been faster than legislative fiscal's ability to keep up with us and turn out their fiscal analysis. In other words, how much this may cost our state's treasury. As a result, we are going to be holding a couple of those bills here in committee until we receive those analyses. And the bills that we will not be working today will be House Bill 2241 and 2404. Okay, we have not received fiscal analyses for those bills. Questionable whether or not we will be hearing House Bill 2403. They are working on the final cut of that financial analysis as we speak, and whether that will be ready for us to review by the time we get to that bill remains to be seen. So if you're here on that bill for work session, my apologies. We'll just have to see how that goes when we get to that bill. So with that, I am going to open a public hearing. Is this the bill that we want to get up first?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, do you want me to read the?
Yes, I'm going to open a public hearing. I think most people are probably here by the looks of things on House Bill 2402, so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2402. Jill, would you please read the analysis, please?
House Bill 2402 appropriates money to the Campus Veterans Service Officers Program for the biennium. This has an emergency clause and it's effective on passage and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. And first on our list is Mike Burton. Mike, I don't know if you have anyone that you want to bring up with you. That would be fine by us. Welcome to our committee, and please decide among yourselves the order in which you testify.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Burton. I chaired the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Reintegration, and I'm also here today. I'm a Vice Provost at Portland State University. And I'm here today in support of House Bill 2402, which would continue the funding for the Campus Service Veterans Officer Program by providing $1.1 million in general funds. This amount is outside the governor's balanced budget. I understand that. But I believe you'll see the value in keeping this program based on the positive impact it's had on student veterans, particularly Iraq and Afghanistan combat vets. This bill comes to you from Legislative Task Force on Veterans Reintegration. However, the original concept to place a veterans service officer on campus came from the governor's Task Force on Veterans Services, a recommendation in its 2008 final report. That task force found there were gaps in veteran services with throughout the state. And while there was a lot of, I was a Vietnam vet. I was one of those people who, at the time, I took advantage of the original GI Bill. It was very simple. I went in, signed up for it, and they sent checks to the university and to me. And I found out as we're going through that the GI Bill at the time was rather complicated. It still is a lot more complicated than it was. And sort of wending your way through the process to find out, even if you're once motivated to do it, is a difficult process. And so we were looking at a complicated system, and we didn't want to have happen what happened to a lot of vets who came back after Vietnam who had a difficult time approaching and getting their benefits. The task force found out, of course, that the GI Bill, original GI Bill, which was passed after World War II, changed, I think, the face of the United States in a lot of ways. A whole generation of people were able to come in and get an education that otherwise wouldn't. There was actually debate when that congressional bill was going through by people that said, "You've got to be kidding. Can't take these farm boys and expect them to go successfully to college." Well, they did, and it changed the country dramatically, and you can see the effect of that. So we were interested in trying to make certain that our vets coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan had the same opportunities. And we found that gap that existed because at Portland State, for example, I found that we had 25,000 students. There's only about 500 vets signed up for their educational benefits, and I said, something's wrong with this ratio. And so we tested out what we thought we were finding out in the task force history, and I got together with Jim Willis, who was the director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we signed an MOU for him to provide a veteran services officer at Portland State. And it made a significant difference. The first day he was there, he put up a table out in the quad on opening day of school. He had about 65 veterans who came to the table, and you've got them signed up for veterans benefits that hadn't previously been able to do that, simply by making that face-to-face contact, showing if they had a friend there, somebody who understood what was happening, and it became successful. He wrote disability claims. He worked with the certifying officer to set up GI Bill payments. He signed the veterans up for VA health care. So it wasn't just education, but the whole range of those things that veterans needed to not only go to school, but to successfully complete their school and get rid of some of the other issues that they were dealing with at the time. It was a success, and we want to continue that. Since the pilot project, Portland State has instituted a student veteran association, and two of its graduate members now work for Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley as helping veterans themselves to become caseworkers. Last session, the student veterans helped write House Bill 2178, which created the Campus Veterans Services Officer Program. Initially, we asked for 18 service officers to be placed at Oregon University and community college campuses around the state. Everyone liked the idea. The problem, of course, is always, as usual, money. Ways and Means said it couldn't afford to fund the program, even though it did support the concept. Director Willis offered a compromise. ODVA would pay for 5 campus veteran service officers to be implemented throughout the biennium on a condition the legislature continue the program with general fund dollars should it want to maintain service officers on campus. Ways and Means agreed to 5 service officers and which have been deployed since September 2009. The Relegation Task Force has seen the work on these campuses, and in a moment you'll hear about some of the numbers, and we hope that the program can be continued. We've heard all the stories about the difficulties of reintegrating back into society after a combat tour. Anybody who's done that knows how difficult it is on a number of levels to come back. That reintegration can be extremely difficult on a college campus, which has its own culture and rhythm, and is quite different than the culture of military veterans, particularly combat veterans. The service officers do more on our campus than simply fill out federal forms. They're a center of gravity for our student veterans community. They help veterans acclimate to the college environment. They provide resources and advice to these vets. And recently, the service officers have been teaching faculty and administrators about military and veterans culture so they can be sensitive to the needs of this unique population. We put together several workshops, I know, at our school and other schools around the state to do just that, to help faculty understand some of the issues that veterans have had, and it's been very, very useful, and it helps the faculty, I think, to understand the needs of this particular population. Others today will provide you with these facts, and I'll get that to a minute. I want to stress today is not just the numbers, but also the intangibles of this service officer being on our campuses. I know the veterans on my campus have been greatly benefited knowing they can reach out to a campus veteran service officer who will help them with anything they need. The partnership we have had with ODVA has been a tremendous benefit, not just for the veterans who are getting benefits they would not have otherwise, but also for our entire campus where veterans come and seamlessly adjust to their post-military life. I was legislator for six sessions down here in the House, and I know how difficult the decisions are about that you're faced with, particularly, I think, uniquely so today. But I also know a program which is good when I see it, and the value of that in return for the state is great. The Veterans Services Officer Program brings GI Bill dollars to the universities and community colleges, disability compensation benefits to disabled veterans. Often these benefits remove someone from being on a county human services thing back to the federal benefits with which they're entitled, and so there's a shift that occurs in there if we can do this properly. VA health care to the vast majority of student veterans and a culture that welcomes veterans back to our campus is something that makes it easier for those veterans to be successful. And these veterans are highly motivated and usually are on a level, I can't give you any specifics, but I know generally that they're more successful in their seeking these degrees because they're motivated to do it. They've got the maturity, they've got the focus and the ability to do that, but they just need somebody to help them get through this system. The program is well worth the investment, and it's not just based on the return of federal dollars, but it's just good public policy. And I'd like to hopefully think that you would favorably consider this bill. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I'm going to ask Dave Cooley to give you some ideas, some of the numbers.
Thank you.
Unless there's questions that I can answer now.
I think what we'll do is hold our questions until your panel has completed their testimony, and then we can ask them of all three of you. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Cooley with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I manage the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program. I'm here today to provide you with information regarding the progress of this program since its inception in September of 2009. As you may know, we have five campus veteran service officers who are strategically located throughout Oregon. We have placed them regionally. They use a university as their base of operations and then travel to multiple campuses of their corresponding universities and community colleges. The Region 1 Campus Veteran Service Officer is based at Portland State University and provides services to Oregon Health Sciences University, Portland Community College, Clackamas Community College, Mount Hood Community College, Columbia Gorge Community College, Clatsop Community College, and Tillamook Bay Community College. The Region 2 Campus Veteran Service Officer is based at Oregon State University. That's Mr. Bedwell to my left, and he provides services to Western Oregon University, Chemeketa Community College, Lynn Benton Community College, and Oregon Coast Community College. Region 3 Campus Veteran Service Officer is based at the University of Oregon and provides services to Lane Community College, Umpqua Community College, and Southwestern Oregon Community College. Region 4 Campus Veteran Service Officer is based at Southern Oregon University and provides services to Oregon Institute of Technology, Klamath Community College, and Rogue Community College. And finally, the Region 5 Campus Veteran Service Officer is based at Eastern Oregon University and provides services to Blue Mountain Community College, Central Oregon Community College, and Treasure Valley Community College. Our service officers are state certified by our department, and they are accredited by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. The VA authorizes these service officers to help veterans obtain all benefits they have earned through their military service. And this includes their education benefits, their disability compensation benefits, their disability pension benefits, health care, vocational rehabilitation and education benefits, home loans, and life insurance benefits. The job of the Campus Veteran Service Officer is to locate student veterans, educate them about all their potential VA and state benefits, and then represent these veterans in their claims and appeals before the federal VA. I would like to share with you how we have helped student veterans on Oregon campuses. To date, 2,556 student veterans and dependents have received help obtaining their Montgomery Active Duty and Selective Reserve GI Bills, the Post 9/11 GI Bill, which is the one that Dr. Burton referred to, vocational rehabilitation education that is for disabilities, and the Reserve Education Assistance Program and Survivors and Dependents Education Program. I realize that's a mouthful. There are a number of different benefits that are controlled and benefits administered through federal law. We have also helped veterans obtain their certificates of eligibility, and in partnering with a campus certifying official, we've ensured that they are in receipt of their benefits. Some of the benefits are paid directly to the veteran, some are paid directly to the campus, and so we have to keep up with that. Today, 398 student veterans have filed disability claims. And to date also, 75 of those student veterans have won their claims, resulting in $224,464 in recovery being awarded in disability compensation. This will be a recurring dollar amount. The remaining claims that I've just introduced to you are still in process. We've assisted 557 student veterans with health care. I think it's important to note that all Iraq and Afghanistan returning veterans are entitled to 5 years of health care at no cost. And although we see that the university system does have the chance for students to purchase student help, we don't have that at the community colleges. So this is a very valuable program for them as well. Of the 2,556 students we have assisted with education benefits, 546 of these student veterans may be eligible for vocational rehabilitation education based on their disabilities. This is a program that pays 100% of the cost of school for disabled veterans. Not all benefits that veterans have earned will pay all of their costs, but this particular program is a retraining benefit, and most veterans use higher education to achieve this retraining goal. Countless of our veterans have been counseled by our veteran service officers regarding adjusting to college life, where to find readjustment, and post-traumatic stress counseling, and other issues. Further, our veteran service officers have engaged the colleges and universities by providing seminars and in-service training to faculty and administration on military and veteran culture. These seminars provide a great forum for learning new cultural competencies for this unique group of students and allow staff to ask questions in a comfortable environment. In a year and a half, the program continues to evolve. Our campus veteran service officers are eager to work with our partners on campus, student veteran groups, and the community at large to ensure veterans attending college have a great experience and receive all the benefits they have earned through their service. Thank you for this opportunity to share this information with you today. I have provided various letters from universities, community colleges, and veteran students for your review, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bidwell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to come here today and tell you a little bit about the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program. For the record, my name is Gus Bedwell, and I'm an accredited Campus Veteran Service Officer with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today to share with you what I do on our university and community colleges throughout the state of Oregon. As Dave said, I am the Region 2 Campus Veteran Service Officer, and I'm based at Oregon State University. The schools that I help and service are Western Oregon University, Lynn Bent Community College, Chemeketa Community College, and Oregon Coast Community College. When I first visited my schools in 2009, I will be honest to tell you that there was some anxiousness on the part of the certifying officials who are the ones on campus who help the veterans get their education benefits processed through the federal VA for payment. Their concern was that me, the campus veteran service officer, was there to take over their job. It was important for me to quickly explain to the certifying officials that we actually do different jobs that are complementary when we work in partnership. While the certifying officials manage VA education benefits, communicating with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to ensure payments, campus veteran service officers are accredited by the USDVA to represent veterans in their claims for all types of federal and state VA education, disability, health care, and any other type of VA benefits, as well as assist them with their appeals when benefits are denied. Once a certifying official realized that my role was different and did not interfere in any way with their role, our partnership blossomed, and today we consult each other almost on a daily basis in our work to help veterans obtain their benefits. And I will say, at most of the universities and community colleges that I work with, we work on the same hours and same days, so a lot of times when I get done with a veteran, I can walk right over to the certifying official with that veteran or vice versa, and it works really well. My job on the campus is to locate veterans, educate them about their VA and state benefits, and file claims for any of these benefits. When I'm new to a campus, I try to set up a table or information booth in a very open area so people can see me, and that gives veterans a chance to walk up to me and we have a conversation. I've also worked with school newspapers to let student veterans know I'm on campus and where I can be found. I hold regular office hours at each campus, which I also publicize and am available via email and cell phone on a continuous basis. While meeting with veterans, I use my training and experience to do initial assessments for post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, military sexual trauma, suicidal ideation, and other issues that might be affecting the veterans. Not only is this important for the disability claim I write, but it is important for the success of the veteran as they're going to school. They need to know that somebody is there to help them. For example, both PTSD and TBI have symptoms that include difficulty concentrating and irritability. Both these symptoms could interfere with a student veteran's ability to succeed in the classroom. If I find a veteran who is struggling with these issues, first I get them medical help they need, but then I suggest they talk with their instructors and the administration to get additional help there at the school. I also encourage them to communicate what other problems they may have while they're trying to navigate through the class, so that way there might be some accommodations that can be offered to them through the school. I have found the schools are more than willing to help any veteran who needs a little more help due to their military experience. Aside from working with veterans, I've also had the opportunity to work with faculty and administrators on each of my campuses to provide seminars on military and veteran culture. Or more to the point, what to expect from veterans in the classroom. As an Army veteran myself, I can tell you that our experiences and points of life differ from those of our non-veteran classmate instructors. By understanding the military and veteran culture, faculty and administrators can better meet the needs of the veteran student. As an Army veteran myself who went through school, I understand some of the needs that the people I'm sitting across the table from me have. Partnering with colleges and universities to help veterans has been the highlight of my career at ODVA. Helping veterans reintegrate while at college will make significant difference in their lives down the road. I know it did in my case when somebody came alongside me. I'm proud of the work we are doing on these campuses and look forward to helping more veterans and their family with the challenges of reintegration, college, and obtaining their veterans benefits. Again, I want to thank you for your time today, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much. First question from Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to say that I was very supportive of the program from the beginning. But thinking back over some of the testimony sessions run together, whenever we started this, there was concern about the county serving CVSOs. It's easier to say. That's why we abbreviate things. Mike, you had mentioned about veterans maybe not understanding their education benefits, for example. So I'm kind of curious, now that the program's been on the campus for a while, the point I'm trying to get to, Gus, is the communication between CVSOs and the campus VSOs, and if there is good communication and cooperation, do you find incidents where maybe a veteran comes into a CVSO and then they refer them to you because they don't know about educational benefits, and since you're going to be the educational expert, they connect you with the veteran? Is there good cooperation going on?
Sir, I would tell you that there is good cooperation across the state between the campus program and the county veteran service officers. And you are correct. There are situations where a unique challenge will come up with a particular education benefit, and the county person is looking at that and going, I know about education benefits, but this is really unique. This is something that Gus specializes in every day. I'm going to refer you to this individual. And at that point, we are co-supporting that person. They are still getting whatever VA benefits they needed from the county person to deal with, and they're getting the education piece from me. So we work hand in hand. And in a lot of situations, if you go to any of the veterans outreach events that we go to, you will see the campus veteran service officers and the county veteran service officers standing side by side and working together with veterans. So for the veteran, they just see two people helping them, and we really do try to connect it and work together on a continuous basis.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Well, I'll just add to, I think the benefits seem to kind of change a lot. You know, we had the issue came up where folks who were full-time, for example, full-time active guard in our state didn't qualify for as much of the benefit as, you know, some of these other folks, and that just changed. There's a lot of information. I find that I always tend to know more than my husband on what benefits are out there. So I think that communication piece and keeping up with what's happening at the federal level, some of those folks who might be in other parts of the organization aren't paying as much attention. And it's significant when you're talking about going from being 60% eligible to being 100%
yes.
eligible and what that looks like. It's a big chunk of change for a veteran who might not know that those changes happened unless they had that support. So thank you.
I'm just curious whether the campuses that you're familiar with offer office space for the VSOs and or the veterans themselves.
Co-chairs, Representative Witt. Yes, the agreement that we entered into with the schools when we started this program was quite simply, we need a place to do business, give us an office space, and just basic administrative support, access to a copier, that kind of thing, and that we'll bring all the services. So many of our campuses have dedicated space exclusively for our use, and then you can well imagine that some of the schools, they're so very crowded right now that there are people who have regular business being done at desks in hallways. What we do find, and we're in a crowded situation, that we do try to just do mostly setups in high traffic areas. It seems to work very well, especially on some of the Portland Community College campuses as an example. But most of the schools do provide us with office space and the support that we need.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Co-chairs, Representative Witt, I'll just add to that, that initially when we had the first program, the pilot program set up at Portland State, space is absolutely a premium on our campus. And we ended up housing the individual in one of my office in my building, as mine being the extended campus building. And then we spent a year trying to make certain we could get that person into a high visibility area. They're now housed right next to in the student services area, and it really works really well. So it takes a little bit of an effort on the part of campuses to figure out how to do this.
Yes.
But when they see the benefit of this, and I don't want to, I'm always hesitant to use this number, but basically to a campus, every one of those students under the new GI Bill is worth about $7,000 a year. So if for no other reason, or the right reason is to simply help these people get through school, but if for no other reason you point out, look, there's some value to helping these people because you're going to get a return, particularly at it, then they begin to see the value of placing these people, these offices in a good high visibility area.
Great, great. Anything further for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much, and thank you for the job that you do helping our veterans. Folks, I got to tell you, the sign-up sheet sometimes is difficult to read, and I've had a couple of us working on a couple of these names, and Mac, are you signed up? Okay, I think it's you that I'm going to call you up, and anyone else, Mac, that you would like to have come up with you? Okay, all right. Please come forward. Welcome.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, my name is Mac McDonald. I represent the United Veterans of Oregon, which is basically every veterans organization in the state with a membership of about 100,000. Before I came up here, I was told by a legislator, make sure you tell who you represent and who you are. Basically, I come from a military family. 6 members of my family were in the military. 1 Navy, who we lost in World War II in the Pacific. 1 Army, who lost an eye in Anzio. My brother Bobby, a Marine, went through the Pacific, including Iwo, never got a scratch. My dad was in the National Guard, went to Mexican border in World War I and France in World War I. And one of my younger brothers joined the Marine Corps in 1949, went to Korea, went through the reservoir, and was the sole survivor of his platoon. Unfortunately, when I came back from Korea, I didn't realize what post-traumatic stress was, but he told me he had a tough time dealing with people and dealing with government. He wanted nothing to do with the Marine Corps or government. And unfortunately, after I went back to my base, I got a call from my mother saying he had disappeared, and he disappeared for over 50 years. We found him two days after he died. He's now buried in Kent, Washington, but he had a fairly good life staying away from the government. As for myself, I served in the United States Marine Corps, United States Coast Guard. I've been both an enlisted man and an officer. I'm a Korean War veteran and Vietnam 3 times over there. I work primarily with special operations. One of my assignments at headquarters, Marine Corps, was I was the backup briefer for congressional committees, and I was the military aide to George Romney when he was Secretary of HUD. After that, I was transferred to Canada at the Canadian Forces College, like our Army War College. I was a senior American in the college and the senior Marine in country. And basically that's about me. As for this bill, it's a win-win for Oregon because we got dollars coming in from the federal government to support these veterans to go to school, and the end result is Oregon gets a well-educated man or woman that will be a good citizen and pay taxes. So how can we lose? And we'll get in many more dollars and worth much more than the dollars that will be spent on this program. It's been successful. When I went to school after Korea, we had a vet rep. I went to school in Rhode Island. I went to school at Virginia Tech for graduate school. In both places, we had a vet rep, and I don't know what I would have done without the vet rep guiding me through the paper jungle that you have to go through. So I urge you to support this bill because it is a win-win for Oregon. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very, very much, Mac, and thank you for your service and the very distinguished service of your family as well. Questions for Mr. McDonald? Mac, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you, sir.
Next, we have Bruce Clemenson. Is Bruce? There he is. And I think I'm going to call forward to Ben Price. And Corey, it looks like. And is it Ray? Corey Ray? Good afternoon, gentlemen. Why don't we, Bruce, you're the first one I called up. Why don't you proceed first?
Thank you, Co-Chairs Committee. My name is, for the record, Bruce Clemenson. I'm the Vice President for Student Services at Lynn Benton Community College, and I am here to talk about how favorably the CAPMIS Veterans Services Officers Program has served our students. I want to let you know that one of the keys to our students staying in school is that the rest of their life can stay in order and they can focus on the job at hand to achieve their academic goals. This program has allowed our veterans and their dependents to find access to the services that help the rest of their life support their goals and initiative to get their education in a timely and easy manner. We have struck a very positive relationship with Gus Bedwell, who you heard earlier. His office is right next door to mine, and I watched how his publicity on campus brought numerous people to my office waiting to see him in line day in and day out that he serves our campus. We enjoy that he also is available across the way at Oregon State, and students will come to my office looking for him for an answer for service. He has his times available. They catch the bus. They go to Oregon State. They see him there, and they are served. So his access to information, his access to our students, has been nothing other than spectacular in serving their needs. We also have had a wonderful relationship on campus with faculty and our certifying officer. His presence creates an immediate connection with our counselors, with our financial aid office, and with faculty that have questions about how to assist. So he has been very positively received as an educator about veteran culture and our culture, and to try to assist all of us work together with that. I have no additional comments, but I'm open for questions later.
Thank you very much. Either of you?
I'll go. All right. Good afternoon, co-chairs of the committee. My name is Ben Price, for the record. I am an Iraq and Afghan veteran. I was deployed once to Iraq and twice to Afghanistan with the 173rd Airborne Brigade out of Vicenza, Italy. I'm here to advocate for the continuation of the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program for the simple fact that there is no other program that directly targets Iraq and Afghan vets as effectively as this one. The VFW, the American Legion, both have access issues, and there's just simply no way that they can possibly fill this void in getting a hold of advocating for veterans on campuses. There's access issues, there's a communication barrier because there's a vast demographic difference between the two groups. I'm the former Associate Students of Oregon State University, ASOSU, Veterans Task Force Director, and last year, 2009-2010, is when I was basically there, and I can tell you from personal experience working with veterans and trying to get them their their benefits, stop loss reimbursement pay, because we had many soldiers and Marines that had been stop lost, which is something that is a very new experience. It's an extremely challenging and a very difficult situation, especially at Oregon State University, where, and I have some numbers for you, I know everyone likes to hear some real concrete facts. So when I started in fall 2009, we had 466 veterans receiving benefits. In winter of 2010, we had 590 students receiving veterans education benefits. In spring, it was 630, and this last fall, it was 719, and currently it's 721. So we apparently have hit a little bit of a slowdown, but you can see the trend. It is going ever higher, and it's not going to stop for at least, I mean, the continuation of this war will kind of determine that. The point that I'm trying to make here is that this is a growing need. This is not, I would like to ask for you for more veteran service officers on campuses, if that were possible, but I know that funding is short. I'm not living in a vacuum and under some cloud of ideology that maybe we can get more, but I know that I would like to ask you for more. I can't really explain just how effective Gus is, because, okay, so if someone comes to me with a problem, and it's something that says, I have a 10% VA rating, I can't help them, and it's they need veterans advocacy to do that. And simply put, he's the guy I turned to. He's the guy I referred people to. He was the person I sent them to, and I just can't say enough about that kind of access. And it's a very key situation at Oregon State University. I imagine other universities in Oregon. So thank you for your time, co-chairs and committee, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you very much. And Corey.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Corey Ray. I'm the current director of the Veterans and Family Student Association at Oregon State. I'm also a work study at the Benton County Veterans Service Office. And I'm here to advocate for House Bill 2402. I started school September of 2008, before the program was implemented, and I mean, it was like a void. I didn't know where to go. Luckily, I'm pretty savvy with a computer, so I figured some things out, but I went to the certifying officials. They were helpful, but they couldn't really give me concrete answers, and I think a lot of people are missing that without a veteran service officer on campus. Also, as a work study, I refer people to Gus on almost a daily basis. We have his cards. I give them out. I tell them over the phone, give them his information. And I know he's effective, but I know his caseload is extremely large, because I get phone calls saying, I've contacted Gus 2 weeks ago, and, you know, how come I can't get a hold of him? And I explained to them, he jumps around from campus to campus. So I know his caseload, just from talking to him, is just extremely high. I don't even know how he does it. And I'm kind of with Ben. I definitely think there is a greater need that's not being met. But that's a different story. That's all I have to say. I'm open for questions, so thank you for your time, co-chairs and members of the committee.
Thank you very, very much. Questions for our panel? Yes, Representative Boone.
Not a question, more of a comment. I was trying to get into my emails from last session and the session before when we started talking about this, and for some reason I'm locked out, so I couldn't really get, I can't be detailed about this, but I do want to say, when this idea first came up, we were happy to get, this was a great idea, we're happy to get into it. And Mike Burton, I don't know if he's still here or not, but he was instrumental in getting this going and helping us get Sergeant Heyer instigated into, I guess, Portland State then. And Benjamin's idea at the time was to have eventually a campus service officer in every campus, both community college and OUS system. And I can't agree more, and we're seeing in such a short time that it's been enacted how much good it's done and how much good it's likely to do. And I would love to give you more, too, like, you know, a whole department, maybe. So thank you for all you've done. Thank you for what you're doing. And have to thank Tom and Jim, too, because they helped move this along. And it's just really a pleasure to see that this has been a success.
Yes, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last session we had, when we had passed this bill in 2009, we had an individual that was attending a lot of our hearings, and he spoke against this bill, although he's very much a veteran supporter. And I just wish he was here today so that he could have a little further conversation with you about the impact of what you're doing. Because he was an individual that felt like if you had access to a computer, you could get access to your veterans' benefits. And so I just want to say how much I appreciate the work you're doing, how rewarding that must be to be in, and I know it's not an easy job, and I know you want to do as much as you can, if not more, but you're having a great effect and great impact on veterans and their families. Thanks for your service, and thanks for continuing the effort. And I'm happy to support the effort and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Anything additional? Corey, Mac McDonald said it's important to tell folks about yourself. Where did you serve?
Co-chair, I served from January 2001 to August 2008, and I served in ICE. I was a Navy veteran. I served in Iceland for a year and a half. Then I was on a ship out of Sardinia, Italy. And then I spent my last 3 years in Sicily.
Thank you very much. And, Ben, I want to thank you very much, too. Gentlemen, appreciate your testimony. Thank you. And thank you for helping our veterans. Okay, next up I'm going to ask to come forward, please, Joe Holliday and Paul Evans.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Holliday with the Oregon University System. Paul apparently had to take a telephone call, so that's why he's not up here with me.
Okay. Hey, late-breaking
there
news
he is.
Here.
All right.
Okay. Welcome, Paul.
Oh. Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to deal with a family issue back in D.C., so cross-country thing. I am here in favor of the bill for the Veteran Service Officer on campuses, but I'm actually the guy that no longer works for the state, so can actually say the things that I'd like to say. And I am here to advocate for more positions. In fact, what?
Did you identify yourself?
Oh, Paul Evans.
Thank you.
Thank you. I knew something was wrong. I was like, wait a minute, the shirt's still on.
I was just trying to mentally remind myself, Paul, whether or not you...
We're in sync. I can see something was up. For the record, my name is Paul Evans, 744 East Main Street, Monmouth, Oregon. Oregon's own Mayberry. Same address. The Veteran Service Officer Program is something near and dear to my heart, as everybody in the committee knows. But for the record, it also is something that brings back, and I thought this was an exaggeration until Tom assured me it's right, and Tom's always right on facts and figures, that for every state dollar in, it's $500 back to the state. So here's the bottom line. If we really are interested in jobs, economy, and innovation, then it makes, to me, a whole lot more sense, even if you have to make a hard priority choice, to invest in something that you know will pay back. And the way that it works with Veteran Service Officer programs, it's a force multiplier. The VSO on the campus finds the veterans to help supplement the GI Bill and other programs that may be entitled to that particular veteran. And those tax-free dollars from the VSO side of the house that the veteran has earned comes back into the community. So if there's any way possible to expand this franchise, especially now with Iraq and Afghanistan starting to change motion, some of the troops that have been gone 4, 5, 6 tours coming back, this is our moment where we can actually expand and try to not only help those that deserve our help, meet our moral obligations, but from an economic opportunity perspective, actually maximize some of those non-federal funds that, again, have been set aside by the Congress. If we don't claim them, they don't come to Oregon, but they're there. It is something that has to be renewed every time. Once you're rated with a particular percentage, that's what you get. So the more contact, the more outreach that we provide, if we can fully maximize it so that there's a VSO on every campus, it does far better than my brain can understand the 500-to-1 ratio, how much potential revenue is out there. And again, remember, 81,000 veterans that we know about in the state of Oregon, 351,000 veterans we think live in Oregon. There is a huge room for bringing that $4 billion that currently is not coming to the state of Oregon that we think should be. So that's my spiel, and thank you for understanding.
Thank you very, very much. I'm going to take questions or comments for Paul so that he can get back to his personal business. Yes, Representative.
It'll be really quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Paul, for reminding us that. And colleagues, we have been asked if we make policy in our policy committees that costs money, that we make our case to the Ways and Means Subcommittee and full committee. And I can think of no better example than this. So you may be called upon again to make this. All of you have testified today in favor of this. It really does make the case, and your numbers are astounding.
Co-Chair, Representative Voot, any time, anywhere that I can help, even not showing up, if that would help. So,
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. I cannot pass the opportunity. Why didn't you say that yesterday? I'm kidding. Thank you, Paul.
Yes, sir. Paul, thank you for so very much. Thank you for all your service. Obviously, you're here today because you care, and greatly appreciated.
And thank you for all that you're doing for veterans, even the stuff that a lot of people don't know about. I know this committee has taken this on and really made a difference in the lives of thousands and thousands of veterans over the last several years. So thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that. Joe, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair and members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday. I am Assistant Vice Chancellor for Student Success Initiatives at Oregon University System. Wanted you to know that we've had a very positive experience with the Campus Veterans Service Officers Program on all seven of our universities. This has been especially critical at our regional campuses and Oregon Institute of Technology, where we don't necessarily have someone who is responsible for veterans affairs, nor do we have active veteran student organizations. So it's been critical throughout the system. If I had anything negative to say, it would be that they're spread too thin, and I think you've heard that from virtually everyone who's testified this afternoon. On some of the campuses, the person comes once a month, and there are people lined up to see them. So it's been a great program. The only other thing I'd like to add is that the Campus Veteran Service Officers have been critical to whatever we have accomplished in the area of veterans reintegration. And so, again, the connection to the Veterans Reintegration Bill and the desire to do more in that area. So thank you for this opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to take any questions as well.
Thank you very much. Anything for the committee, for Mr. Holliday? Not seeing any. Joe, thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Blake Gordon and Maria Ballard. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. I'll go first.
Co-chair and members of the committee, my name is Blake Gordon. I'm here on behalf of the Veterans and Family Student Association at Oregon State. I was the founder of that in 2008 and served as the president in 2009. I'm also a member of Alpha Company, Marine Corps Reserve Unit Eugene. Did 7 years with them, served a tour in Iraq in 2003, actually under, at the time, Captain Riddell.
Lieutenant Colonel now, Marine.
Yes, sir.
Get that straight.
I'll see you later.
So we came back in 2003. I pretty much knew that I was going to go to college. Both my parents were college students. I was what you'd call a traditional college student. I didn't know a lot about the benefits, but I kind of fumbled my way through and got my school paid for. But there's a lot of Marines that do not. The military has a very wide demographic of economic and social backgrounds. A lot of them don't have the family members or the know-how of how to go to college. It's not even something that's on their radar when they come back. So I always try to drive to my Marines, hey, these benefits are out there, go look for them, but you really need a lot of help. And that's what's so great about the service off service position. But what it really comes down to for this bill is money, aside from the altruistic component of it, which I'm sure everyone agrees with. And really, it's a win-win, like everyone's been saying. As the director of the VFSA, it's a student-run group. Veterans would come in, we'd talk with them. Every time I talk to someone about their GI Bill benefits, just 5-minute conversation, guaranteed, found a couple $100 that they didn't know about. And that money adds up quick. Just my rough estimate in my head, I'd say of the 700 students on campus, each single one of them, there's a benefit that they could qualify for that they don't know about. Easily $100, we're talking thousands of dollars possible. And that's of the students that even apply for the benefits. Yeah. There's students out there that don't even try. They're so burnt out from the military, and when they get to the registrar's office, so frustrated, they just give up. And we know those people out there, and I think we owe it to them to help them. So these dollars that they're not using are federal dollars. They're not coming from the state. We're talking about budget cuts and money that we need. The benefits that they can get from the federal government takes a load off the human services, food stamps, housing, all sorts of different things. It costs, $1.1 million for this bill, but the amount of money that the state's going to get in return for these services, the money going to the student for school, is going to be 10 times that easily. And that's my spiel.
Thank you very, very much. Maria.
Good afternoon, chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Maria Ballard. I was a 27 Mike, which is a multiple launch rocket systems repair with the 832nd Ordnance Battalion in Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. I currently serve as the team leader for the Student Ambassador Program at Lynn Benton Community College. I specialize as being a veterans liaison, and I began working with Region 2 CVSO Gus Bedwell in January of last year, 2010, so a full year now I've been working with Gus. As a student ambassador, Gus and I have worked together. I've been the founder of the Veterans Club on our campus. He was kind of an advisor for me and helped me establish that, answered my questions, attended several of our club meetings. We, as a student ambassador as well, I hosted veteran question and answer sessions. They were very informal. We served pizza. And it was an open-ended opportunity for our vets to come and sit down and comfortably ask questions, not only from Gus, but with our certifying official, Kathy Martinak. They work very well together, and as often as we can, we bring them together to bring our students toward them. I'm quite happy to say this term I hosted our very first faculty seminar through the Student Ambassador Program with Gus. He did a PowerPoint presentation, and we answered several questions of our faculty members. I'm quite proud to say that went really, really well, and I hope they continue that in the future. Personally, I would like to mention that when I began working with Gus Bedwell, he had come to me about my veterans benefits. I have a medical discharge. And I was told that I'm not even a veteran and that I won't receive any benefits. Since working with Gus, we have established that I have a 40% service-connected disability rating. I have full VA healthcare coverage, and I am currently in the process of getting 100% of my Chapter 33 post-9/11 GI Bill. And as a single mother, a part-time college employee, and a full-time psychology major at Lynn Benton, that is paramount to my life and really has changed things for me. I would like to mention a few things about working with our VSO. At our college, Gus has become a household name. We know his face. We are comfortable with him. He has an open door when he's in his office. He is a friendly face that our vets recognize as they're walking around. They go to him just to even say hi and hang out. I would have to mention, like the other veteran students that are here, that we do need more VSOs. They are essential to the success of our veterans here on campus, and I thank you for your time, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for Blake and or Maria? Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chair, I had to do that.
That's called a field promotion.
Yeah. And thank you, Blake and Maria, too. I think you're continuing to make the case here. And see, Mike Burton just returned, so he missed a few good plugs here. And I have to say, I just noticed the Brigadier General in the back there, and he's been integral to this process. So I can't see, I mean, I know everybody in this room, but I don't think anybody opposes this. And I think we're just hearing more and more how important this is, and I hope that we can get there, because I am very concerned about the numbers of people we're going to be hearing from when they get back, and wouldn't it be great if everybody who wanted to could go to college and have this service. So thank you. Go Bees.
Anything additional? Thank both of you for your service as well, also for your testimony, and I would just make the comment that not only is this the right thing to do, but the return on investment, like as you correctly pointed out, is in fact huge. And I, for one, would love to see the $4 billion that Major Evans referenced. I'd love to see those dollars floating around in Oregon's economy right here and right now. So thank you very, very much for your support of this program. Anyone else from the public that would like to testify on House Bill 2402 at this point? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2402 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2243. Jill, would you please read the bill analysis?
House Bill 2243 establishes an additional remedy for violations of unlawful employment discrimination against service members by allowing the Attorney General or the Director of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to file suit on behalf of the service member.
Thank you very much. And we have Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having served in Chair Schaffler's committee, I wanted to be called to the desk and not just assume I was next. Chair Escoval and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative for House District 50, the great city of Gresham. Proud to be here today to bring you this, what I consider to be a very important bill. I just want to say just a few things before we get into that, and that is that it really truly has been an honor to serve this great state, but it's even a greater honor as a veteran to serve our veterans. And I think that I'm not speaking alone on that. There's a lot of folks that really appreciate, as we saw in previous testimony, the ability to help our veterans navigate through these times. I was somebody who ran on that idea that we needed probably less parades and less photo ops for politicians, but a few more programs and policies and protections in place, and I've tried to focus my efforts on that. And in 2009, I was proud to be part of a very aggressive agenda that was brought forth by many folks that had dedicated a lot more time prior to me coming, and they created that task force. And with that task force, they developed an agenda of initiatives that came forward in the best interest of the veterans. And we were very supportive, and as a body, we passed those, and they're now into law. During that time, as we reviewed, we found that there were some protections in place at a federal level, but we felt that Oregon could probably do better for our veterans and wanted to get some things in place to do that. I do applaud the efforts and the collaborative effort that we experienced, specifically with the Office of the Attorney General, John Kroger, and the Office of Bureau of Labor and Industry Commissioner, Brad Avakian. With their input and their guidance, we passed a number of bills putting into law some new protections for our veterans. One area of critical importance is that of the unlawful employment practices. As you all know, Oregon's veterans are somewhat unique in that the majority are citizen soldiers. In addition to being the sons, the daughters, the sisters, brothers, mothers, and fathers, they're also your local postal worker, your police officer, firefighter, contractor, grocery employee, housewife, you name it, and that's our veteran. At a moment's notice, these citizen soldiers serve proudly, without question, leaving behind families and friends and jobs. In 2009, House Bill 3256 was the bill that we passed to further protect veterans' employment rights as it relates to USERRA. Today I bring you House Bill 2243, which I consider to be a technical fix, which is absolutely in the best interest of our veterans. What it doesn't do is it doesn't loosen or lighten the ability to act upon those conducting unlawful employment practice. You'll see in the bill that in the bill summary and also throughout the bill, the word or appears several times, specifically between the commissioner and the Attorney General. That word appears several times, and to be brutally honest, I really don't care personally who's going to enforce these laws as long as somebody's stepping up to protect our veterans. Because after all, this is about our veterans and protecting the veterans and not about which agency provides that. Together, they should work collaboratively and do what's in the best interest of veterans, and I have all the confidence in the world that they can do that as the bill is written. I do understand there's some angst that comes with tools of enforcement, but I also want to say, as I said in 2009, that Oregon business, as private business, has a respectable history in the way that it treats its veterans on reintegration and reemployment. In fact, as stated in 2009, the most common offender is the public sector. I'm sorry to say that, but let me also state, as a public employee of 24 years with the City of Gresham, I have to say I'm proud that the City of Gresham not only extends its coverage to its veterans, but it also offers differential pay to our veterans when they're deployed. I could only wish that other cities would follow suit and other entities. It's tough on veterans to be deployed. Now, with that being said, as I said before, this bill is an effort to bring a situation together to allow our veterans to not just file civilly, but for our Attorney General to bring the suit, or our labor commissioner. That's the change in this bill. I don't believe it's complex. I don't believe it's controversial. I do believe some folks do carry some anxiety that comes with this because it is an authority. But I can say that there's been instances where businesses are first contacted, they're not even aware that they violated USERRA. And then they put into that action and they put together that remedy. That's really what we're seeking. This isn't about money. This isn't about trying to hold, somebody to pay large, heavy fines. This is about accountability. It's about doing the right thing. And it's about holding those folks accountable for their actions. And I believe, again, giving it, as Bill is written, both authority in the Attorney General's office as well as Bureau of Commission, that we are doing what is absolutely in the best interest of our veterans. And I do appreciate your time, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Representative Matthews. Questions or comments? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, is there a procedure of hierarchy? If a veteran felt that they had a grievance against an employer, whether it was a state employer or a private sector, and they went to the Attorney General's office, Department of Justice, or the BOLI, I would like to be confident that BOLI or DOJ would ask the veteran, have you been through the proper channels first? Have you gone through ESGR to have them advocate for you first so that we're not jumping into a litigious category where we're just bringing lawsuits against? Go ahead.
Chair Witt and Representative Huffman, I appreciate the question, and you know my history with litigation. I am not litigious either. I do believe there's remedy prior to that. ESGR, as you recall, in 2009 was before us testifying on a lot of the bills, and they're very supportive. General Doctor, who's a friend of mine, they still work very hard on that. Perhaps there might be an agency that would be better to speak to that question, though. But I do believe the goal for us would be first remedy, first sight, treat it at the lowest form, and get it done. But what we're talking about here is a remedy to egregious acts. We're not talking about somebody that overlooked. I'll give you a case in point. Recently, a firefighter tested for a promotional test. Currently in statute now, thanks to 2009 legislature, those preference points should have been awarded during that exam process. They weren't. Now, the city will have the opportunity to make that right and award those preference points based on their oversight of failing to ask for or to broadcast, first of all, the DD-214 or the award of preference points being in the bill summary. I can tell you that in that case, that individual that has the grievance in this case was told, had he had more education, he would have scored better. Those preference points are there for a reason to protect veterans, and the reason why we extended them beyond 15 years was, once a veteran, always a veteran. And as we made those gains in 2009, all veterans should be treated equal, whether you're Coast Guard, Navy, Air Force, whatnot. And for those of us that scored really high in our ASVAB, Army. But so anyway.
I couldn't have said it better, Representative. Ooh. Thank you.
I'm just hoping that Lieutenant Colonel man. Is with the Army.
Ooh.
Although he's Marines, isn't he? I'm a firefighter.
You should, Representative Matthews, you should see all the support building behind you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But, you know, as we get into what, you know, and I was approached by an individual that thought potentially there could be pardon the expression, but a turf war. And I do kind of relate this in the simplest terms. Honestly, I'm a firefighter. I have to do that just to get a level of understanding. I still believe people don't care when they have a fire. They don't care who's holding the nozzle as long as the fire goes out. They don't care what color the engine is as long as somebody's responding. Quite honestly, for our veterans, I want to get that same mentality. That's why we work so hard on the reintegration task force on No Wrong Door, so that when people are looking for help, they're getting that assistance. So, you know, back to the question, ESGR, this doesn't replace their need. They have a tremendous existence and need in the business community. In fact, they're doing a lot to relieve the anxiety. And again, let me just be clear. Private sector employees or employers are actually the model. They're doing the right thing. There's a couple of cases out there, certainly, and those folks will be held accountable, I am sure. But for the most part, you know, the small business is not the one who's impacting.
Thank you very much. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So I'm very fortunate that I come with, like, built-in, you know, Wikipedia of Army stuff at home that I can bounce these types of things off of. And my husband was one of the inspector generals for the state for several years. And I asked him about this bill last night, and we were kind of running through it. I said, when someone comes to you with a grievance about an employer, one of your soldiers comes to you, I said, tell me what that process looks like. He's like, look, I'm going to send it out to the alphabet soup, ESGR, right, folks. And he said, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to get it handled right there at that level. And then, you know, from there, you bring in, like, the U.S. Attorney's Office. So there's definitely federal remedies. And he's been in the Oregon Guard since 1993. So I asked him, I said, what is the prevalence of instance that you're seeing this happen? And he said, you know, basically as a company commander, he said he thinks he had one case that kind of moved forward the dial. As a battalion commander, he had like 3 that he thought were, you know, run him up the flagpole. And as an IG, he said he maybe saw 6 a year. The concern he brought forward is that if some of the most egregious offenders really are our public agencies. And help me out if I'm wrong. I want to make sure I'm getting this right. But if an agency's representation is the Attorney General, then where is the level of autonomy between representing somebody who's coming up with a case against somebody who is there to represent the agency, and that body is the same person? And that would be my biggest concern, is that does that really then serve a veteran if this Attorney General also has to have the state's best interest potentially at mind in representing an agency against the claimant?
I think Chair Witt and Representative Parrish, that's a fair question. If I didn't know better, I'd say your husband has been lobbying the bill in that fashion, because several people have come forward with that. And so what I would rather do, I don't believe he's signed up to testify, but if it would be okay with you, Mr. Chair, if we could bring up Mr. Dvanovich from the Attorney General's office, perhaps he could shed light on that. I don't see that as being an issue. I did have lunch with our labor commissioner, Commissioner Avakian, and he brought that scenario forward as, what if this case happens? How do you defend and prosecute yourself? Essentially, and I took that to the Attorney General as a question, and the Attorney General convinced me that that's not the case and that wouldn't occur. Perhaps if Mr. Dvanovich would oblige, he could come forward and answer questions on behalf of the panel, because I get where there could be some questions, but in the end, again, I think the or is a statement that does that. One or the other will be looking at the issue. The majority of these are handled at the lowest level, which is appropriate, but we are talking about the egregious acts. And in recent case, we'll have a conversation offline, and I'll share with you some other very interesting facts. Mr. Chair?
Questions or comments for Rep. Matthews? Come on back up here and join us. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your bill introduction. I would, is Mr. Dobanovich in the...
Yes, sir.
Would you come forward, please, sir, and speak to Representative Parrish's earlier concern?
Sir, representatives,
co-chairs, Representative Parrish. My name is Keith Dubanovich. I am Chief of Staff and Special Counsel to the Attorney General. Let me attempt to address your question. First, there are a number of procedures that we have in place for processing of any claim. And what we initially do is investigate the matter, find out who the parties are and what the problem is. And as Representative Huffman indicated, many times the dispute can be properly resolved back at the ESGR level if the veteran or guard member understands how to move through the process. If a matter comes to our attention that involves a state agency, you're absolutely correct. We, the Department of Justice, have to represent the state agency. Now, one benefit that we have, knowing what the law is, we can counsel the state agency on how to do it correctly if we indeed find that they're not doing it correctly. If we're unable to resolve the matter at that point, as Representative Matthews has indicated, it would be appropriate for BOLI then to be the agency that's involved in pursuing the claim on behalf of the veteran or guard member, because the Department of Justice would be representing the agency. This scenario is not unusual. The U.S. Department of Justice finds itself in exactly the same position. It pursues claims on behalf of veterans who have been denied benefits by federal agencies. And at the same time, obviously, it has to defend those same federal agencies. So that scenario is not uncommon.
Thank you. Any further questions? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much, sir, for that clarification. I'd like to call up now, please, Kate Newhall. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall. I'm the Legislative Director at the Bureau of Labor Industries. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 2243. As the agency responsible, we are the agency responsible for the enforcement of the state's employment protections for our uniformed servicemen and women. These employment protections were passed, as Representative Matthews mentioned, by House Bill 3256 and protect employees from employment discrimination based on their service obligations. We commend the work of this committee and Representative Matthews for championing that legislation, and we believe it's critical that these employees are able to serve their country without fear of retaliation or fear of losing their jobs and take our mission to protect their employment rights very seriously. The issue that you were just discussing is one that is concerning to us as the agency. I think by allowing, it creates a situation that could be somewhat a strange dynamic for the Attorney General to both be in a position of bringing action against an employer and defending against that same action. I think that the way that the legislation is currently drafted, it doesn't have anything in there that precludes that. It really would be, depending on where a particular employee had filed their complaint or took it, there's nothing that would preclude the AG's office right now as it's drafted from both filing the action and defending the state agency against it. I think at the Bureau we feel pretty strongly that that's exactly why the enforcement capacity is vested in a separate entity like the Bureau of Labor and Industry, so that it does maintain an independent and autonomous investigatory and enforcement capacity, much like our federal counterparts at the EEOC and HUD do. And I know that there is a role that the U.S. Department of Justice plays in that, but there are also independent enforcement entities.
Great. Questions for Ms. Newhall? Yes, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. And maybe I'm still trying to get caught up to speed in reading statutes. I'm definitely not aware. If I potentially, I guess my question would be, if I brought this to your agency, didn't like the outcome, I don't see anything in this bill that doesn't say I can't also then run it up the flagpole for the Attorney General's office as well, and potentially having a duplicative, the use of resource for one person who's working both systems.
Representative Witt, Representative Parrish, members of the committee, I agree that that seems to be the case in the way that this legislation is drafted. I would also say that in the normal course of action and that in a BOLI enforcement case, if someone files a discrimination complaint on based on any of the protected classes, that person has, after BOLI concludes its investigation, if we dismiss it and don't find substantial evidence of discrimination, the person has the right, after we have dismissed our complaint, to file a private action in circuit court. But what you can't do is simultaneously go through both processes of BOLI at the same time. So you file with BOLI, and then have, after we have dismissed it, you have 90 days to make a decision on whether or not to file a private action.
Please.
But this, as it's written, looks to me that I could file it with you and then not like your answer and then file it again with the Attorney General the way it's written, which seems not the best use of our resources. But my particular concern on that scenario has nothing to do with public agency now. It has everything to do with a small business who potentially is going to have to defend themselves twice to two different agencies if someone in the AG office doesn't like what the BOLI decision is, decides to chase another outcome. Now I've got a small business owner who is going to be in the defensive position twice. And as I understand this bill, that allows them to do that.
Representative Parrish, I agree that that is the way that it is written.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Additional questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that question has inspired me to ask this question. Has there ever been a case in BOLI where perhaps something's been dismissed and it's been picked up and later pursued at a different angle and been successful?
Representative Witt, Representative Matthews, I have no doubt that that has happened. I think that when someone enters into the administrative law process with us and files their complaint, we do an investigation and make a determination on whether or not we think that there is substantial evidence of discrimination. If we find that there isn't and we do dismiss it, a complainant still has the opportunity to file that action privately in circuit court. I think the issue with this is that you could have, both. You could have two actions potentially filed in circuit court, one coming from a dismissal from our agency, and then the person filing that action privately in circuit court, and also at the same time potentially having the Attorney General filing something on behalf of that same harmed individual.
I'll refrain, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Additional questions? Kate, thank you very, very much. I'd like to call up now, please, General Caldwell and Colonel Riddell. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sean Riddell. I'm Chief Counsel for the Oregon Department of Justice Criminal Justice Division, where I'm charged with supervising all criminal investigations and prosecutions on the part of the Oregon Attorney General. I also have an alter ego, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Sean Riddell of the United States Marine Corps Reserves. I have been a member of the United States Marine Corps since 1994 when I joined as a second lieutenant out of college and served 4 years as an infantry officer with the 2nd Marine Division and served as the 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit Special Operations Capable out of the Mediterranean in 96. I left active duty in 1998 to attend law school at Lewis and Clark, graduated in 2001, passed the bar on September 10th, 2001, and joined the reserves on September 12th of 2001. Since that time, I have served 2 tours in Iraq as a combat engineer officer, as an executive officer with Engineer Company A stationed in Eugene, Oregon, and then again as its company commander a year and a half later. With it, once again, Engineer Company A. I have served with the 6th Engineer Support Battalion now 9 years as the operations officer of the battalion XO for 3 years and now currently serve as the battalion commander for the largest operational battalion in the Marine Corps Reserves of roughly 1,900 Marines scattered across the United States. I have 120 Marines under my command currently deployed and 150 Marines scheduled to deploy in March 15th. I just spent my weekend in Arizona welcoming home 50 Marines who just returned from Afghanistan. In my time with the Marine Corps Reserves, I have deployed and reintegrated well over 1,000 Marines and turned them back into their citizen soldiers, as Representative Matthews has pointed out. I speak here both as a veteran and and a member of the Oregon Department of Justice in favor of this bill. As a combat commander and someone who has helped Marines deploy and reintegrate, I can tell you the hardest part of this for a citizen soldier is the reintegration process. And the hard part of the reintegration process is, and the hard part of combat, is getting those Marines to focus on their mission. And they cannot focus on their mission, and they cannot focus on reintegration if they do not feel like they're being taken care of at home. All too often, and I wish I kept the numbers when I was a company executive officer, and I wish I kept the number as a battalion executive officer, because very often the Marines know that I was a lawyer and a prosecutor, so these calls would come to me. My landlord is trying to evict my family. The credit card agencies is not lowering my interest rates, as USARA replies. My employer is giving me a hard time. I've been denied a promotion, or I've been denied some sort of special shift that I rate. Very often it came to me, and I had very firm discussions with many people throughout the state of Oregon, throughout the United States, educating them on the USARA beliefs. And I've seen Marines in combat ripping their hair out of their heads, worried about their families back at home being evicted. And I can't tell you how important it is that they feel that they're taken care of, and later on and reintegrated, that they have a job waiting for them. I also, as a prosecutor, know the effectiveness of a law is directly related to the number of people dedicated to its enforcement. It's simple mathematics. That's it. I ask that you find in favor of this bill and push it forward, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you very much, General Caldwell.
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. I think the testimony you've heard today, and I'll refer back to earlier conversation that Representative Matthews brought up before the committee, the no wrong door idea is a good idea, and I think this is what one of the issues that I think the good representative was trying to approach with this particular bill, and I think that flows. If we go back and look a little bit at the history of how we really got to this whole concept, was, as indicated in earlier testimony, these are not prevalent. These are not multitude of these types of cases every year. However, there's always, as Representative Parrish indicated, I think on average probably there's somewhere around three or four a month that have a question. Now, the real egregious ones probably down to three or four a year that really have a problem that we have seen. Out of the 8,500 guardsmen that we have, we've deployed over 13,000 guardsmen since 2002. And I would suspect that out of that whole lot, that only three of those really became really big issues. And there's one that's pending presently. So I think the numbers are small. I think that's pretty plain to see. The objective, I thought, when we first introduced, or when the bill was first introduced by the Attorney General's office in the 2009 session, is a great objective, was trying to, and part of the problem that we had was that, yes, ESGR is there, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, and they do a wonderful job of working with employers and educating them. But we did have a tough case. The only remedy at the time was really to go to the federal attorney's office, the U.S. attorney's office, and seek redress under the federal statutes. And that was one way to go about that. Typically, the federal attorney's office, undermanned, understaffed, overworked, doing big cases, drugs, you know, all kinds of different things. And this was not a high priority. So we really weren't seeing a lot of action with respect. And I think some employers knew that was probably going to be the case, as the good Lieutenant Colonel prosecutor on my left indicated, it's directly related to the enforcement. So if there was nobody to enforce it, then some people took advantage of it. So one of the objectives was to offer attorney fees and literally make every attorney in the state of Oregon who's licensed to practice law an advocate. And we were really in hopes that we would see people use these local attorneys, and this would bring this to the forefront, and we could take action that way. Well, as it's turned out, most of the local attorneys don't want to put out that cost to get to the court and do the things they need to do. So clearly, I think there's a hole in the objective, and anything that we can do to close that hole and offer, in my mind, our soldiers, our service members, all of those service members, a remedy for the very few cases that do come up on an annual basis, then I think it's worth our time to do that. I was in the back of the room thinking about how this would be and I do appreciate the or comment in here, that either or. And perhaps what maybe would solve some of the problems is maybe, and I don't know if it should be in statute or an administrative rule, that maybe the commissioner could put together, is some sort of matrix of how this process would work. In other words, we don't have the problems that Representative Parrish brought up, so you don't have dual filings, you don't have people going through multiple doors and trying to do that. And that might take some of the angst out of, you know, who does what, when, and where, and how. I think the commissioner has done a great job of representing many, many people in the state of Oregon. But at the same token, when we do have one that's really a nasty case, and many of them, unfortunately, are public employers, then, of course, that matrix would show you have to stop here and go the other direction versus where you have an egregious act that's done by somebody else. Then the Attorney General may do that. That might simplify it. I don't know. Again, I'm not an attorney, but my objective here is to tell you that anything we can do to help these servicemen on these half a dozen to maybe 10 cases a year, then we should do it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for our panel?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
I have my AFAS score available if you want to see it.
No, sir, I'm not going to challenge you.
Mine was so long ago.
Thank you very much.
That's right.
I'd like to call up now, please, Jail Wilson.
Welcome. Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. Representative Matthews is right. There are people with anxiety. I'm one of them, and I've told you why, Representative. Back in 2009 with House Bill 3256, it may be the only unlawful employment action in the history of AOI that we actually supported. That was a long discussion. It was a hard discussion. We felt that there was a very compelling case for employment rights, reinstatement rights for returning service members. And I could also say that if we knew that this would open the door for the Attorney General's office to have purview over employment law, we would have found that that was not an acceptable outcome. And so hence the heartburn. And the issue here is employers in the state of Oregon understand the process with regard to employment issues. It's a bully process, okay? As Ms. Newhall described, take your case to bully. Bully says, dismisses, they have a right to sue letter. You can take your issue into civil court. I don't think we ever envisioned that the Attorney General's office would also have purview over employment law. Discrimination cases. My case is different. I don't really care if the Attorney General's office is in the position of prosecuting claims against state agencies and defending them. I don't really care. It doesn't affect me. What does affect me is now we have a protected class that we've established by law for which the Attorney General now can prosecute these cases. And the good people that testified before me, I'm pretty sure won't be joining me here when the next protected class says the Attorney General should prosecute my employment cases too. And this is a problem where politics puts you in some funny situations, and this being one of them. I guess the issue is that I would like to know for myself personally, is there something within the bully process that's been found to be inadequate? And if so, can we address that? Might we be in a position, I hear a lot about public sector employers being the primary issue. We heard that back in 2009. Can we put some sideboards around the issue so that the Attorney General his involvement revolves around public sector employers, maybe an exhaustion of administrative remedies in BOLI before going to an AG procedure, something along those lines. But I'm just telling you, I have to protect the process for the whole spectrum of employment law and reserve that to BOLI, because I can't have a free-for-all where the Attorney General is involved now, and we got there by first going through 2243. And so that is my predicament, and that's why what I have to express to you right now.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Wilson, Representative Matthews.
Not a question, Mr. Chair, but I just want to say to Mr. Wilson, I do appreciate the manner in which you're approaching your job. These are your duties, and I get it. I'm not offended by this, nor do I see you or anybody you represent as being anti-veteran. It's not about that for me, and I don't take it for, and I know it's not about that for you. So I just wanted to say that I appreciate the job you have to do. As you say, politics puts us in funny positions. I appreciate where you're at on it, and in this case, we oppose each other. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Anything further? JL, thank you very
much.
Appreciate your testimony. And next, please, Val Conley. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Val Conley. I am the Veterans Services Division Administrator for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I am here today to support House Bill 2243. During the 09 legislative session, ODVA supported House Bill 3256, which placed Federal Uniform Services Employment and Reemployment Act language into Oregon statute. The goal was to make it easier for Oregon service members and veterans to seek remedy should their employers violate federal law. House Bill 3256 made it possible for victims of USERRA violations to file suit in Oregon instead of having to file a federal lawsuit. House Bill 2243 is another step forward in protecting Oregon service members and veterans by allowing both the Attorney General and the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to file suit on behalf of a USERRA violation victim. From ODVA's perspective, this is a good bill because it gives veterans even more options to ensure their reemployment rights. ODVA believes that all USERRA violators should be held accountable if they are not willing to reemploy Oregon service members and veterans as per the law. And on a personal level, I can tell you that I was working for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs when I left to go into the Army, and I did use the Veterans Reemployment Rights Act to return to the agency. And for any public employer not to recognize USERRA laws is just something that's totally foreign to me, and it's inexcusable. So I also, on a personal level, I truly support this bill because I know how important it is for a veteran to have a job when he leaves and then to be assured that he or she will have that same job when they come home. It's very important. So thank you for considering this bill, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for Ms. Conley? Val Mac McDonald said that we should let folks know our service. Care to share that with us?
I am an Army veteran. I was a 64 Charlie, which is a truck driver.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're gonna call you right back up on the next bill. I don't know if you have your materials with you.
I do.
You're free to sit here until we open the next hearing. Anything further from the public on House Bill 2243? I'm not seeing anything. Yes, Representative Matthews, please.
Chair, and I know we're not going to move the bill, and I respect that, not moving it today. But I just want to say that after this conversation, you know, first of all, the state of Oregon is not the only employer of public employees. A lot of other entities employ these folks. So if we're going to hinge this on, well, the Attorney General can't prosecute themselves, therefore this is a bad idea, that doesn't exist. Secondly, the question about if there's adequacies or inadequacies within the current system, I believe, yes, there are. I'll have those conversations with individuals, but I don't want to have them publicly at this point because I'm lacking the detail of the information, but I certainly will share my findings. Beyond that, again, let's recall that these are folks that, let's make sure that we don't paint a picture that every veteran is being somehow treated unfairly in the process by whether public employee or private employee. It simply is not occurring that way. You had a great experience. I appreciate you sharing that. I think many veterans do. But ultimately, this isn't about the ability of a veteran to go out and hire a lawyer. Because quite honestly, in this case of reintegration, veterans don't have the money. Their families don't. They've been struggling. They don't have access to what we provided in 3256. This comes forward as an opportunity to say, look, we're going to get you that service that you need. Now, I understand that with the anxiety of an either-or type situation, but, you know, I'd consider a happy amendment, take bully out of the bill at this point, which isn't a friendly amendment. But quite honestly, I'm going to be very frustrated if we decide that inaction is better than not taking action at all. I hope that we can get there. I will provide some data
I'll have the ability now that I know what I'm up against to talk to people privately. But thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for indulging me, and thank you to the committee for listening. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Matthews, and I think you've told us that the door swings both ways, so I appreciate that,
that to yourself.
Very much. And Ms. Conley, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your service. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2243 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2919. And Ms. Conley, please, again.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Val Conley. I am the Administrator of Veterans Services Division for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I am here today to support House Bill 2919. As the committee is aware, veteran unemployment in Oregon is significantly higher than state unemployment. When the 41st Infantry Brigade returned to Oregon last spring after a year in Iraq, 51% of their members were unemployed. Total veteran unemployment in Oregon is higher than 20% statewide. House Bill 2919 is a great tool to help alleviate those large numbers. By providing grants to businesses that hire veterans as full-time employees, the Oregon Business Development Department is actually doing two things. First, it is helping to employ veterans, help that our veterans desperately need. Second, these grants will help the economy by bolstering businesses, many of which will be small businesses, so they can thrive in their communities. Obviously, such an investment has a return as well in both payroll and corporate taxes. I want to thank the Oregon Business Development Department and the sponsors of this bill for this innovative approach to the problem of veteran unemployment. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much. Questions or comments, committee members? I am not seeing any. Okay. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public like to testify today on House Bill 2919? I'm not seeing anyone, and I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2919. Just an announcement before we move into work session that I have to find my right paper here. We have been unable to procure a fiscal analysis for House Bill 2403, and we will not be working that bill today for anyone who's here. And with that, bear with me just a moment here, folks, while I shuffle the papers. Okay, yes. I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2578. Jill, will you remind us what this bill does, please?
This House Bill 2578 modifies existing statutory language requiring the Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs to establish a third Oregon Veterans Home in Roseburg. It authorizes the Director to seek federal grant funds to establish the home.
And this,
Has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee members, your pleasure on this. First of all, any discussion? I am not seeing any. I would be open to a referral to Ways and Means. Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2578 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2578 to the House floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any objection?
Why are we going to discuss this? I mean, the characters that were in here presenting this bill, I don't know.
It was It was a tough crew, Representative Huffman. I agree, and this rises to a level of higher analysis at this point. Co-Chair Esquivel.
I just want to remind us on the committee that you can't take things at face value. This is for the veterans. Remember that.
All right, on House Bill 2578 Representative Esquivel's motion, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2578 and shift some more papers. And I am going to open.
Oh, I didn't see that. On
I know
the other
side.
It's on the other side.
Okay.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2638. Okay, committee members, discussion on this bill. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please, Jill. Thank you.
House Bill 2638 appropriates money from the general fund for expenses associated with bringing electricity to the Oregon Coast Military Heritage Museum. This has an emergency clause effective July 1st, 2011.
And it has a fiscal?
And this has a fiscal.
Do you want to know what it is?
Maybe briefly, yes.
The fiscal analysis on this is that the proposed legislation appropriates $41,000 of general fund monies to the Department of Administrative Services for distribution to the Oregon Coast Military Heritage Museum.
Thank you very much. Now, committee members, discussion on this bill. Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A worthy project. No doubt. I am concerned about the fact that we're spending money we don't have. This isn't a Ways and Means Committee. I understand that, but I think I do need to. I mean, it's quite possible this could come to my subcommittee, and I'm concerned about that. It's only $41,000, but.
Fair enough.
Everything I hear out of the governor's office and the co-chairs that spending additional monies, even $40,000, is not the direction that we're heading. So I don't know if we want to go ahead and punt this to Ways and Means maybe, but I don't know if my co-chairs here have had different instruction on these types of policy decisions or not. I'm looking for some direction.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else from the committee? Co-Chair Esquivel.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that what we do, if it's good, we send it on. If we can't afford it, then we can't afford it. But, I mean, the idea is good. I think that we should pursue that, send it on. And if Ways and Means, if it's not in our ability to pay for it, then we'll get those answers. But they, you know, we don't know what we don't know about the next forecast. There's a lot of things that are coming into play. We don't know about how they're restructuring or anything of that nature. So you would know more about that than we would, by all means.
So make the policy decision here.
And then let them make the responsibility of paying for it goes to the Ways and Means section. That's the way it's always been, that we make the policy, and if we can do it, fine. If we can't, that's okay, too.
I can understand that.
And it's no reflection on Ways and Means. It's no reflection on policy.
But I think a good discussion. And I think for the audience, it brings to bear the two different considerations, both the policy considerations as well as the fiscal ones. And oftentimes they are separate decision-making points. Additional questions or discussion, excuse me. I'm not seeing any. The chair would entertain a referral at this point.
I'll make the motion.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, I moved House Bill 2638 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2638 to the House floor. Was that with a recommendation, Representative?
Yeah, with the recommendation of the due pass.
With the due pass and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
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 Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the bill is sent to the floor with the subsequent referral. And with that, I am going to close the work.
Excuse me.
I'm going to close the work session on. That's that fast gavel, yeah. Mr. Co-Chair.
If I had walnuts, I'd put them underneath.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2638. Jill, do you have the list of bills that we have coming up for our next session? I didn't mean to catch you in mid-stride here. While you're pulling your stuff together, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, I would ask, Mr. Chair, that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Matthews to vote on 2578.
Co-Chair Esquivel moves suspension of the rules to allow Representative Matthews to vote on House Bill 2638. Is there any objection?
2578.
Excuse me, 2578. Thank you. Clarification of that. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, do we need to fill the good representative in on the discussion we had while he was absent about the character of the people that testified on behalf of this bill? Or is that?
As long as we don't include any personal discussions here.
We're not going to go into the Army bit, are we?
Shucks.
Representative Matthews, how do you vote?
Representative Matthews votes aye.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
We'll close the record on House Bill, is it 2578? And further discussion for the good of the order? I'm seeing none.
Were you in the Army?
That's okay.
Army,
you're
Army.
Fine.
Okay.
You're fine.
I don't have a chance.
I'm not hearing anything further at this point. So with that, there it is. Okay. Jill, if you give us a brief rundown on coming events.
The hearing for next week, March 1st, 2011, will be having a public hearing on House Bill 2229, which establishes Homeless Veterans Coalition and Department of Veterans Affairs, House Bill 3205, which creates the Oregon Veterans Business Enterprise Program, House Bill 3206, which increases the tax credit for health care providers who provide services under TRICARE contract, House Bill 3207, which requires a public employer to interview each veteran who applies for civil service position and meets minimum qualifications and special qualifications for position. In addition, we're going to be having an informational meeting, hearing from Tom Mann of ODVA on an explanation of the Medicaid cuts to the Oregon Veterans Home.
Thank you very, very much. Seeing nothing further, I'd just like to take this opportunity. We heard from a number of veterans today with a great deal of service to our country, and we heard from a number of them who have done so numerous times. A very special thanks to them personally and to their families as well. They are the ones that have made our country possible. A sincere thanks on behalf of our entire committee. And with that, we stand adjourned.
Nicely done, Mr. Chair.
Can I
gotta go out.
the ones that you want for
Coast State.